All right, well, thank you guys for coming today. My name is Stephanie Ogden, and I work with an organization called Water for People, which is a nonprofit organization that works in water, sanitation, and hygiene in 11 developing countries. And my capacity with Water for People is a research fellow. So I'm in charge of looking at some water management issues across our different country programs. And that's a little bit about what we're going to talk about today. So the first thing to tackle here is, why are we talking about water management at a public health conference at all? And our last speaker did an excellent job of outlining some of the reasons that water and sanitation is important to the public health sector. But I think as professionals in the public health department or in the public health sphere, you're all very aware of the role that water, sanitation, and hygiene plays in that. And it really is about having safe water of adequate quantity for everyone. And not only that, but then also to promote sanitation and hygiene, and also to promote environmental health. And just to give some examples, a recent study by the UN and the World Health Organization reported that actually increasing the quantity of water that families have access to has an even greater impact on public health than increasing water quality, and that even greater than that, that simple hand washing in communities can improve public health to an even greater degree. So it really is an issue of quantity, quality, sanitation, hygiene, and then these greater environmental effects. More than that, then why are we talking about water management? Access to potable water is only sustainable in the long term with successful and effective water management. So having safe water of adequate quantities for all people increasingly depends on sound water management. So let's talk really quickly about water as an equity issue. And I do the majority of my research in Rwanda, and Edgar is going to talk quite a bit about the Guatemala program. But just to give you some examples from the field about water access, I work in two watersheds in Rwanda. One is a peri-urban watershed, which is close to the city, and one is a rural watershed. And in conducting household interviews in those watersheds, what we found is that families are using an average of 12 liters per person per day in each of those watersheds. Now, when you compare that to average U.S. use, that is less than 2 toilets flushes. The average U.S. in-home use is about 70 gallons per person per day, only for indoor uses of water. So this is 12 liters per person per day for every household need, including watering livestock. The average distance that people are walking is about 37 minutes round trip for every 20 to 30 liters of water. And the reason that it's 20 to 30 liters of water is that 20 to 30 liters of water weighs between 45 and 70 pounds. So this woman is actually in the peri-urban watershed in Rwanda, this picture, and she's carrying about 70 pounds of water home. And then we also know of this globally as an equity issue. And this is most easily encapsulated in statistics that we all know about child morbidity and mortality. A recent statistic by the World Health Organization in that about 18% of child mortality is related to inadequate water and sanitation. And that's predominantly in the rural areas of developing countries. So when we talk about this as an equity issue, the majority of this child mortality and morbidity is happening in the rural areas of developing countries. But it's about more than just good health. And so as an equity issue, it actually extends far beyond the public health sphere. And that is into the social and economic sphere, in that water touches every part of our lives, and we already know that. But with respect to equity, it touches on production and productivity, the time that people spend collecting water and how that takes away from the rest of their lives, livelihoods, cultural and spiritual significance, environmental health, food security, and many other issues that without access to water are compromised. So then let's talk a little bit about water management and what role that plays then in this equity issue. So Edgar and I do quite a bit of research and work in integrated water resources management. And this is a big paradigm in the development world for water management. And it's a big word and a big concept, but what it basically means, if we boil it right down, is that for too long, water management has taken place in a very sectoral way, that we've been managing water in very different departments and managing all of its uses separately. So that is that there are government departments that are in charge of regulating and managing drinking water. There are other departments that are in charge of managing water for irrigation. There are other departments that are in charge of managing, for example, water for fish conservation or for environmental conservation. But that in the end, all of this water is the same water. And so it does no good to manage it separately, but that we have to manage all of those uses together in a coordinated fashion. So this integrated water resources management says that we have to manage all of the uses and all of the uses of water together, that all of the water users have to have input into how that water is managed, and that we have to do it in a coordinated way. But not only that, that we have to do it in a way that protects the environment, that sustains that water in the first place. And integrated water resources management goes even beyond that and says even then we have to take into consideration how land is used, because water is tied to land and tied to the way that land is used. So that's just to scratch the surface of integrated water resources management, and that's all we'll do today with the time that we have. But one of the big elements of integrated water resource management and this type of management in this integrated way is including people as part of the decision-making process. An essential tenet is that management has to happen at the local level and that people have to make their own management decisions. We know from hundreds and hundreds of case studies in the development world that empowerment, engagement, participation, all of those big words are essential to the long-term sustainability of water systems and water access. And this is the real crux of the issue, is that it isn't just about water system infrastructure, it's about long-term sustainability of that water system infrastructure. And so we know that at the base of that are these sort of fuzzy and ambiguous concepts of empowerment and engagement. But in order for people to fully engage in that management, we know that they have to feel like they have information. Those management decisions cannot be mandated from top down, and I think the last speaker made some very good points with respect to that. But rather, those decisions have to be made at the local level. And that's exactly the hiccup, is what is the disparity between the type of information that's needed at the government level to make decisions and the type of information that communities have access to, and the disparity between the understanding of that information. And so often in rural areas, formal education rates are low. Organizations and governments often will pay little deference to traditional knowledge or what communities already know. And oftentimes there's little information or technology transfer in between communities and their governments. So the big question that we at Water for People are trying to tackle with respect to water management issues is how then do we encourage and empower communities to manage water in a manner that addresses public and environmental health? And we've been looking at that for quite some time. And so I want to introduce Edgar Fajardo, who is the coordinator of our Water for People Guatemala program. And he's going to tell a little bit about what the Water for People Guatemala program has seen with respect to this and water resources management. And once he's done speaking, I hope we have enough time to come back and do a small and very short conclusion based on that. But let me introduce you to Edgar.
Hello, everybody. I will try to speak a little bit fast, as soon as I will try to ask you to listen fast. We are working in Santa Cruz del Quiché. This is the municipality in Quiché. It's one of the poorest departments in Guatemala. Actually, it has nearly 84% of poverty in the country. The population, what I'm going to talk is in one watershed in Santa Cruz del Quiché. Actually, in that area, the population is around 90,000 people there, and 63% of that population is rural. The annual population increase is about 3%, and in that municipality, there are 48 villages. And it's a little bit 1 mile over Denver, so we are gaining a little bit. So the situation for that watershed we have is already Stephanie told that the illnesses related with water and sanitation for the past year was 30%. And child mortality is related with water and sanitation is about 39%. I mean, it's a little bit doubles the world average. And the water coverage in that watershed that you were looking there is 58% and 59% of latrines coverage, which is nearly the same that sanitation coverage. But there in that municipality, we have 30% of all the water sources are contaminated with fecal coliforms. So all the red points that you are able to see there have fecal coliforms in there. So if the water and sanitation coverage increase, it's a trigger to get better conditions related with health, education, malnutrition, economy, environment, at the end, poverty, decreasing poverty, which is the same like playing billiards. If you hit the ball cold water, it can hit other topics as health, morbidity, mortality, economic for the country and for the families. And so in such way, people will be able to do many other things related with their social capacities, or I mean, I'm talking about participatory processes, social, family issues. I mean, there are some other things that can be hit just by that, by the water and sanitation related issues. So, but how it can be reached? Water for People in Guatemala actually is working in using the IWRM, Integrated Water Resource Management, as a way to get people of the villages, local governments, other NGOs, mayors of municipalities involved. In such way, we are able to plan all together what we need. Because I can give away a pant or a t-shirt in my way, but it doesn't mean that it will fit to everyone. So everyone has different needs, which need to be fit, and so it is needed to talk with people that has that need. And in order to that, people are able to get involved, and one of our concerns is really, okay, we are working in water, sanitation, health and hygiene education, IWRM, rain catchment tanks, and things like that. But are we asking people if they really need it? They are really involved in our process? Or probably that can be some of the things that we need to do, and those are just part of the activities that we are doing. But it's not just, what I mean is we are working with capacity building at the local, at the municipality levels. We are working with water and sanitation infrastructure. At the end, reach the Millennium Development Goal is not just part of the government's concern, it's about all of us concerned. So everyone has to be involved in that. And of course, it is needed to talk a little bit about sanitation and health and hygiene education, how to improve our environment. Because at the end, if we are working with very good infrastructure in one village or in other places, the water source or the spring sources, someday will be dry if we are not able to keep them. So we need to talk about that, these things. In order to that, we are thinking that just to put a couple of examples here, according to Quesada, which is a UNICEF member in Guatemala, he's always saying this, per each dollar that is invested in water and sanitation can be saved $9 in cost for curative treatments. And according to World Health Organization, each US dollar invested in watershed management can save anywhere from $7.50 to nearly $200 in cost for new treatment and filtration facilities, which is a really huge amount. So there are some things to reflect about this. Thank you. I will let to Stephanie talk a little bit. Okay.
All right, so then just to wrap up real quick, and bringing it back to the topic of water equity and social justice. The picture on the left is a picture of a borehole that is no longer working in the peri-urban watershed that I work in Rwanda. And this is pretty indicative of much of water system infrastructure around the world that's put in by aid organizations. And there's a recent statistic that says that 60% in Africa of boreholes fail within the first 2 years, which is a stunning statistic on the overall sustainability of water system infrastructure. So it's not just, again, about water system infrastructure. Increasing a community's access to potable water in the long term is a much greater issue. How do we keep that water system infrastructure, even once it's there and in place, working over time? And that's an issue of water management, among other things. And it requires a sustainable management that sees management in a much greater, as part of a greater whole, not simply the infrastructure itself, not simply a single community, but as part of something much greater and the environment and the environmental context in which it exists. What we've learned from our Guatemala program and our Central American programs that have worked in this integrated water resources management for several years is one of the defining findings from this, as well as we see other organizations, is the focus on capacity. And that's not the same as education, but capacity is empowering. Capacity really is about how communities themselves make decisions for themselves. And as Edgar says, even ask themselves if an aid organization goes in and asks or allows the community to ask themselves what kind of service they want, not what kind of service the aid organization wants to give them. So we need to find ways to both defer to local knowledge and to do it better than we do. And we need to empower communities to be able to collect and utilize the information that's available to them in innovative and appropriate ways. There's not always a ton of information available at the community level, not the type of information that a government, for example, needs to use in order to make national water management decisions. But what kind of information is there on the ground? There's lots of valuable information there. And we need to be able to empower communities to be able to collect that and use that for themselves. And I'll tell you very briefly one way in which Water for People is trying to do that. We've just released a program called Flow, which is a monitoring program. And what it's intended to do actually is to go back into communities 3, 6, and 10 years later, after water system infrastructure is in place, and ensure that that water system infrastructure is still working and that it's still being managed. And what we're trying to do is to be able to collect data at the rural level using handheld devices, basically a sort of cell phone application, a cell phone program, to be able to collect data at the rural level and then aggregate up. We're just getting started with that, and there's many iterations. But we hope that even that type of technology or that type of program can help communities to collect information ultimately by themselves. And so let's bring it back to the health issue then at the end. Long-term health relies on sustainable water access, not just water access right now. And sustainable access relies on effective management. So we do have to incorporate, as a water sanitation organization like Water for People and like many of our colleagues, we do have to figure out how to incorporate in a better way water management into our programs. So thanks for your attention.